Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. May 10th, 2011. Got it too good. Welcome to episode number 16 of the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. My name is Kevin England. Sliding behind the microphone one more time to bring you another episode of Beekeeping. Working without a net here tonight. It's been so long since we've been able to get in here and get you an episode, but so many things on my mind, and right now the beekeeping season is just going full bore, so it's time to get an episode cranked up here and share some thoughts with you. Today's episode is really going to feature on the local hive report and what's going on, and we'll give you some ideas of what's going on in our neck of the woods here in New Jersey and share with you some thoughts concerning specifically how this spring is shaping up from a beekeeping standpoint. And let me just say, wherever you are, hopefully it's as good as it is here in New Jersey, because we are going gangbusters. We're going to wrap this episode up with a little bit of feedback from a recent purchase made online for some beekeeping supplies. I'm going to talk about different vendor sites and a little comparison and bring in some insight on that. So let's jump right in here. Local hive report. So if you've joined us in the past, you know that we have two hives on the property. Trying to keep it simple because there's not a tremendous amount of time to get out there and care for a lot of bees. But as hobbyist beekeepers, we keep two hives so we can contrast one with another. As you've probably heard, if you've listened or are a regular listener, hives are doing good. They came through the winter very well and stocked with bees. We were ramping them up for the honey flow. And let me correct that, because I don't like when that's said. We are ramping them up for the nectar flow, and the nectar is going to result in honey in the box for us and for the bees. So that being said, yes, the last episode we talked about spring management, and we were going to talk to you about some other things of dealing with dead outs and whatever. I suppose overtaken by events, opportunities lost there, because most of you who had dead outs have probably long since taken care of that. My expectation is that at some point, when the craziness settles down here in our neck of the woods, and as you probably know, if you've a common listener here, soccer, baseball, scouts, and all these other home-type things have commandeered life, along with making sure that the house has the grass mowed and all those other things. That's the wife's job, by the way. She loves to mow the grass, but that's another story. Looking at what we have going on here, so back to beekeeping. Our bees are doing great, and you're supposed to be managing the bees here in the spring to make sure that you switch the hives, you take care of varroa, all the basics that you're supposed to do in anticipation of the nectar flow. The period between our last episode, which I'm going to guess was a little over a month ago, and this time frame, the routine information was that you would feed the bees if they needed them after overwinter, and if they made it through there, you would look for the opportune warm day to swap the boxes and make sure that you moved what is typically the pattern. The bees move up in the box, and you move the top box of a two-box hive to the bottom and switch the bottom to the top. Our hives right now are sitting on two bottom boards that are standard bottom boards, not screened bottom boards. So some of the objectives that we had for spring in beekeeping was switch the boxes and get some screened bottom boards underneath them. Well, as you can tell, if I haven't been behind the microphone, which is one of the things I really like, unfortunately I've come to a realization that we're weekend beekeepers. I work a lot and go to work early, come home from work late, and the opportunity to get out and get to the bees during the evening time just doesn't make any sense. So if the weather is nice on the weekend and there isn't some conflict that takes it out, I'll get out there and dive into the bees as much as anybody else. But you know what happens is 11 o'clock you get a baseball game, 2:30 you have a soccer game, and by the time you get home it's overcast and raining or something like that going on, and that limits your opportunities. We had a couple fair opportunities, I want to say in April, to go take a look in the boxes. And one of the most gorgeous days I spent going to a friend's house and helping them install packages in all their hives because they wanted somebody with a little bit of experience to help guide through. And so opportunity lost there. But let's get back to, yes, I did get in the hive. So we refer to our hives as Hive 1 and Hive 2. We commonly look at them from a location standpoint. Went out there in early April time frame and did an inspection on the bees, and there were a lot of bees in the box. We were cognizant that too many bees would ultimately lead to a swarm, but I was still too cold on the occasions that I was out there to break the hive seals and switch the boxes. So I went for the next best thing. For hive number one, we had two medium supers available for honey with frames without drawn-out combs. So they were plain foundation, but still, we were starting to see signs of nectar flow. So put the two of them on the box. And hopefully that's like the penthouse upstairs. The bees would move up, not feel crowded, be able to negate the concept of swarming. And I knew things were a little bit dodgy. I looked into the box. I pulled the first couple frames. The good news is they still had honey from the overwinter season. So all that strife, all that worry about whether or not they would starve was for naught, because they did make it through. And a mental note for next year is not to fuss so much about how much honey they had. So what I did see when we pulled the frames, and we have some pictures to back this up, is that the top of the frame, of the outermost frame that had honey on it, showed old comb pattern, meaning it had old comb, it had old honey, it had been walked on, it was a little darker on the surface. And lo and behold, it had fresh, new honey that had been converted from nectar flow early in the spring down in the bottom half of the outer frame. So to me, that shows a couple things. All season long, right up to the point where it was above 40 degrees, our bees were out pulling in pollen, gangbusters all year long. And now I could see that there was some sort of nectar flow for them, and they were packing the box full. I was rationalizing to myself, and this is the opportunity I had. There were four honey supers, mediums, out in the garage. Two of them were for hive number one. They had just plain foundation. Two of them were for hive number two. One of them had drawn comb. The other one was base foundation. So hive number one, it got the two foundation ones. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, all season long we talked about the fact that you want to feed the bees in order for them to create the wax needed to build out new comb. But here, you have a situation where the bees should be able to build out the wax because there's somewhat of a nectar flow. So I put the two boxes on, anticipating that the bees would find something to do. They would get to work to start building out comb and left them to their devices. I did the same situation over in box number two. Took a look. The hive looked great. Loaded with bees. Put the two boxes on the top and left them to their devices. Fast forward to last weekend on a Saturday afternoon. Nice weather. Popped outside. Went out to box number one. And one of the things I want to do is get these screen bottom boards underneath my hives. Well, as I said, underneath both hives, hive number one and number two, we have solid bottom boards. We happen to have one screen bottom board in our possession. So I was going to go out to hive number one. I was going to swap the boxes because I didn't get a chance to do that. Figured better late than never. And when I did that, I was going to put a screen bottom board underneath. Took the lid off, take a look in the box, nothing going on in the top medium super. Pulled that one off, next box down, second medium super, took a look, nothing going on, not a stitch of comb, and only maybe a dozen, two dozen bees in both boxes. Took the next super off, and looked down in box number two, and you could not put another bee in a box. Absolutely loaded. Ding, 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 ding. Can anybody say swarm here? As soon as these bees get beyond a certain density, they're going to swarm. So I guess I'm going to continue with the course of action I set out. I pulled the top box off after inspecting a couple frames and seeing what I, you know, saw brood, saw drawn comb, lots of honey. Everything's packed. And the challenge here is that they're honey bound, right? And all signs point to swarm. I look in the bottom box, kind of the same situation. There's a little bit of open comb there. So I swap the two. I put what was the brood laden box on the top on the bottom, and I pulled out the solid bottom board, put the screen bottom board in, and put the two boxes together. Put the honey supers back on. I actually had a feeder. I put that on top, put the top cover on, closed up shop. And I went back a couple days later to take a peek on the hives. And I didn't have anything to do with hive number two other than peek inside. So I just kind of peeked in. It looked status quo. Everything was good. Went back a couple days later. I know this is a long story, but it's getting there. Just hang in with me here for a little bit more. Pulled the coroplast board, which is that plastic board, and looked at it. Saw some varroa there, but don't see any varroa problems in the hive. What I'm disappointed about is the honey supers have been there for 2 weeks, and there's not a stitch of new comb, and I'm at a loss. I'm thinking to myself, do I start feeding these bees sugar water? They're already bound down in the box with as much honey as they have. What are they going to do with it? But do they need sugar water? That really doesn't make sense for me. So maybe you have a suggestion for this. You want to send me in a note, kevin@bkcorner.com. We have a beekeepers meeting this weekend, and we're going to talk about the honey flow and this particular topic. So I'm going to take what I know there, and I'm certainly going to ask this question and see what our conglomerate of beekeepers is going to tell me. And incidentally, as exchanging some of these precursor messages to the meeting, several others are experiencing this same situation. But let me not get ahead of myself. I start to wander over to hive number two, which on our property is somewhat about 50 yards from the first one. I get halfway there, and all of a sudden I see these bees in the air, and more and more and more, and I look to the left, and lo and behold, there is a swarm hanging off the tree. Now, it's a Sunday afternoon. It's about 30 minutes before I'm supposed to go to a soccer game as a soccer coach, and here I see half of my investment hanging on a tree next to me. Now I'm in Kevin mode. What am I going to do about this? So I look at this swarm, and I'm looking at the bees, and I'm first trying to discern, are they my bees? Well, logic would have it, they're 10 feet away from a hive. They're hanging on a tree. They got to be my bees. And given the condition I just walked away from in hive number one, I suppose I know the story about hive number two. I wander over to the tree. Take a look at what they're at. And the good news is, they're eye height. Great. They're not up in the top of the tree. They're not hanging somewhere where I got to do acrobatics to get them out. I pretty much could just scrape them down into a box. I had talked about the possibility of doing splits. Well, nature decided for me. The good news is, I took some video of this. So I actually have some pretty cool footage of what was going on and what I'm about to describe. After this podcast, you can head over to our website, check out the video section, and actually see me in action collecting what was part of our bees. So, what happened next? Ran into the garage, grabbed a wheelbarrow, grabbed the two deeps that we had in spare, with all the frames that had drawn out comb, wheeled them over underneath. I made a phone call to Roger Gares, because I know that he had relayed to me in the past that he had captured a couple swarms, so I knew he had experience with it, and he happened to be standing with Stan Wozzetowski. So after consulting with them and running over a game plan, one thing that they shared with me that I hadn't considered is using sugar water. I knew that as a technique. It just, in the moment, didn't hit me, so I'm glad I made the phone call and did the consult before I got to work. Put on a bee suit, got my boxes ready, and this was the game plan. Stepped up to the swarm. I took my brush. I turned over the top cover. I swept the group after spraying them with sugar water, and here's the point of the sugar water. Just like you're going to install a package, you spray the bees with sugar water, and when you spray them, it wets them. They do two things. One, it hopefully is going to keep them from flying like crazy, and secondly, it's going to let them groom themselves or take care of each other and maybe not be inclined to fly. So you have this swarm, and I'll describe it to you. It was about 30 inches high, and in diameter around the trunk of the tree, which was probably about 6 inches in diameter, it's another 4 or 5 inches deep. So a lot of bees here. I'm talking, I'm going to guess, 20,000, 30,000, what do I know? General guess, right? I stuck the inner cover underneath, or the outer cover it was, underneath the swarm. After spraying them, used a brush and brushed the big clumps and just dumped them right in a box. As soon as I got them in the box, I sprayed them again. I swept every bee that I could off, each time going back and spraying the bees, because as you take the outer layer off, it exposes an inner layer that hasn't been sprayed, and those bees could fly if you knock them off. Now, as you go through and take this whole swarm down and dump them in a box, there are bees airborne all over the place. The good news is, they don't have a hive to defend. They have just saturated themselves with honey in the hive that they left, and they're rather docile. And quite frankly, I didn't get stung, never got buzzed. It was a rite of passage, as I explained it. It was really a pretty cool experience. So, scraped all the bees down, wheeled them over about 20 feet past the original hive. And what I've read in bee culture is you could actually set them up right next to the other hive and they'll stay put if the queen is there. But I had actually cleared an area. I've been talking about building a garden and cleared part of an area to put the garden in. So I left them in the wheelbarrow. I went and got a couple blocks, cement blocks, built a little pedestal, and set them up. Well, as you're taking care of the first batch of bees and getting them all settled in, the rest of the bees that are flying are going to go back and they're going to land on that same exact spot because the pheromone from the queen and the bees in waiting state. So the bees swarm out of the box. They pick a place to land. Everybody puts pheromone there. Everybody gathers in the swarm. The scout bees are out looking for a new location and everybody's going to come back to the spot until everybody gets a signal, hey, let's go. So in this context, what happened is the tree trunk where I scraped the bees off or brushed them off with my brush had pheromones. So everybody flying comes back to that. So round number two, I go back with the box and I scrape them in and I put them in the second deep that I had. I dumped the first ones in the first one, dumped the remainder in the second. And I'm guessing that I got 75 to 80% of the bees after this one, walked them over, added them to the other box, and now I have two boxes sitting by the hive with 80% of the bees. I went inside for a while and did a couple things. I went back outside about 2 hours later, went back to the tree, and everybody had stopped flying, and anybody that was anybody left flying in the air, and maybe even some from the hive that I collected, I don't know, came back and got on the trunk of the tree. So one more time, brushed them off, and this time I did what Stan recommended. I took a can of wasp spray, and you'll hear me in the video if I don't edit it out, as I refer to this stuff as methyl ethyl death, but the expectation is you spray this on the trunk of the tree and it masks the pheromone and the bees won't come back to it. And presumably what you see is as you dump the bees into the box, you want to know whether you got the queen or not. So I scraped this last batch down onto a bottom board. I walked them over and I dumped them in. The good sign is, as soon as I took the box over and set it on the pedestal for the first go round, there were bees on the landing board, there were bees on the side, there were bees on the top, with their abdomens up in the air, pumping, and they were spreading the pheromone. And to me, that means, hey, the queen is here. Come join us, fanning their wings, back end up in the air, pumping pheromone. So after the first batch went in, bees up in the air. After the second batch went in, bees up in the air. After I turned this third batch over and sprayed the trunk, backside's in the air. It's a terrible way to describe it, but that's the answer, right? So three times, got 99% of the bees, I think, still flying or whatever. Left them be, went inside. The next day, I came out, and there was a baseball-sized collection. Actually, I skipped one. I collected the third time off the trunk of the tree, and then I went back and I found them off the trunk of the tree on what was a vine growing up the tree. And I made a couple snips. There's a surprise in the video for that one. And took those over. And then the next day, all that was left out in the cold. It was kind of funny. I went out. I was sick on Monday. This was following day. I was sick from work and out of commission, really. And you'll hear me on the video. I sound absolutely terrible. But I surfaced in the afternoon, and I went out to go find out what happened with the hive and make sure that they didn't fly the coop, right? And I went out to the hive, and there was a little baseball-sized clump. And they looked like they were freezing. I don't know how to describe it. It just looked to me that, like, it was some 35 or 40 degrees at night, 45 about when I got out there. And it was a cool, cloudy day, and they just didn't look good. And I clipped this off, and I took it over, and I put it on the landing board of the hive, and they all stayed clustered together. And I literally had to spread them out, and as soon as I spread them out and they didn't have the warmth of being clustered together, they all turned to the right and went right into the hive. And a couple bees came out and got in the posture to let them know, hey, you're welcome, and everybody's in. So all's well that ends well. That's a pretty exciting experience. If you've never had to do it, maybe this will be your season, because, quite frankly, going back to hive number one in their most recent inspection that I did, right now the hive is just completely packed, and I'm finding queen cups. I found an empty queen cup in hive number one. So I'm still kind of distraught. This past weekend, I went into the hive, which is the most recent inspection. They have not drawn out any comb. And when I did look, I found open queen cups, which means to me there's a new queen in there roaming around with the old queen. The old queen has given her all, and she's ready to turn this hive over to her daughter. And I'm expecting hours, if not minutes, that this hive is going to swarm and go somewhere. And I don't have any more equipment to put it in. So one of the things we're going to have to decide here at Brand Hollow is, do we want more hives? We had contemplated that four would be a max. Maybe we would build a fifth one. Advice given to me is maybe what I should do is go buy a couple nukes, and as these bees just continue to grow, take the excess bees or splits and put them in and turn around and see if people are willing to have them. Or I had talked to one of our vice presidents today about adding them to the club hives over at our location at Deer Path Park. So all these options are available, and let me state for the record that I had to reconcile this whole situation with myself. As, am I a bad keeper? Am I neglectful? Where do I stand on this issue? And quite frankly, the discussion was this year, what strategy? Obviously, I'm going to tell you, not selfish in a manner, we wanted honey this year. We didn't get honey last year. We wanted to make sure we got some honey. And I have good news on that front. But the bottom line is, we also talked about making a split and or having a third hive collected out of a swarm. Little did I know that it was going to be our swarm to be the one to fill the box, but serendipity and great experience aside. Now, if hive number one swarms, I have no vessel to contain them. Am I going to be upset about that? Quite frankly, there were two mantras we got involved in this. Is one, we wanted a little honey, just like everybody else. And for the amount of money that we have invested in saving the bees, you know, a little bit of honey I don't think is too much to ask. And it's going to be the most expensive honey anybody's ever purchased, but we're all the more richer for it. The second part of this is we got into save the bees. As noble as that sounds, it's really kind of an undertone of, I think, why many people did this, is the plight of CCD and just the fascinating hobby of it has been so rewarding that if we lose a swarm and it goes off and becomes feral bees, I think that's great. I think this is nature trying to compensate for what happened, and what a spring we have. So as I talked to other beekeepers, I had a conversation literally this afternoon with one of my friends. His box is loaded. His boxes are loaded. He's got more bees than he can deal with. And as he inspects, There's queen cups all over the place. Same situation. As I read our forum, their boxes are loaded. People have queen cups all over the place. Everybody here in New Jersey, at least in our neck of the woods, and I'm expecting to hear this same thing, is having just a phenomenal amount of bees. Even my friends that we set up with packages, they're doing great. The bees are ramping up. They're doing great. They don't have to feed them, and the nectar flow is on full bore right now. It's actually apparently pretty early. I was reading a post from the apiarist Tim Schuler saying that the nectar flow is coming in our area. Well, I think it's already here, quite frankly, and if it's going to be this good. The funny thing about this spring in New Jersey is it's rain, and then it stopped raining for a period of time. Rain, and stopped raining. And my experience, that means good nectar flow because the plants have enough moisture to create the nectar that the bees need. And these bees have been pulling pollen from day one. I mean, as soon as even when the snow was out there, the bees were out foraging and finding pollen somewhere. So what a blessing for a spring that we have. Hopefully the summer won't turn the curve and put us behind for winter management. But so far, good stuff. So where is hive number two? I've been neglectful in talking with that. If you remember a few moments ago, I mentioned that hive number two started with two medium supers on top of two full boxes, and this is the hive that swarmed. The medium supers, they are building comb like crazy. So answer me this. Why does hive number two build comb on new foundation and hive number one have absolutely no interest? I don't have an answer for that. But the good news is there's honey in there. And quite frankly, I'm thinking that we're going to end up putting more supers on here because if they're pulling as much as they have in this past week, we're going to be stacking boxes until we can't reach them. So we're going to get our wish, right? We created a new hive already. And I'm a little lost on hive number three, right? So for a swarm, we put them on two deeps. All they had was drawn comb. They have no pollen. They have no honey and no reserves. And if it rains or they can't get out and forage, they'll be in a little bit of trouble. So I pulled a frame of honey and a frame of nectar. Wait, let me back up and say that again. I pulled a frame of capped honey from nectar, and I pulled a frame of pollen, and I put it in that box with them. And I'm going to take a peek at them this weekend and see how they're doing. I'm trying to let them go to their own devices, but as I peeked in on them in the evenings, I get home about 6, 7 o'clock, the sun is setting, it's twilight or whatever, they're still working and I see pollen going in. As soon as I see pollen going in, I have to believe that there's brood in there. I actually snuck in that box this past weekend and I pulled a couple queen cups out because I couldn't find the queen. I pulled them out, figured it was no harm. I have no idea. This is serendipity beekeeping, folks. And I stuck them in that box. If these queens from hive number two hatch and go on, then they'll battle it out and figure it out. But they're all our queens from our hives. And, I guess time will tell if that was the right answer or not. So, wow, this is like a half-hour hive report. And a lot to talk about. So do stop by the website, www.bkcorner.org, and take a look at the video. You'll see me in action collecting the swarm. And you'll get to see exactly what I described. And hopefully you'll like the video and get to see me living in the moment. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break here. And we'll come back. And I wanted to give some commentary about, we need some additional equipment here this spring. A couple things that I wanted to order and a couple things that I need to order. And I wanted to talk about the experience, and I'm not going to give it all away. Come right back and we'll tell you what happened with this little foray into a purchase. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Beekeeper's Corner. You know, the theme of this episode is Got It Too Good, and our bees are going good. And I guess this is a difficult problem to have, but a good problem to have when the bees are growing so fast that you don't have enough equipment for it. You know, I was in a position to make some purchase of beekeeping equipment. As I just mentioned, they need a couple more supers. I'd like to get some screen bottom boards. It's not going to be a ton of equipment, but I was going to place an order. And in the past, when you take a look at a beekeeping supply, at least as is with my buying patterns, I tend to do my research as to what vendor I'm going to use. And then once I find one, I stick with them. Every once in a while, I'll go take a reevaluation. But if there's no compelling need to move on, I'll typically understand that the homework was done and I'm comfortable with the vendor. Well, I had about a $100 order or so to apply. I wanted to buy a handful of things on my shopping list: two screen bottom boards, a couple queen excluders, two medium supers. I always wanted a hive pulling tool. I think those, I'm a gadget guy, and I always wanted to try one of those. And I hate when you take your hive tool and you put it down in and you start to pry and you get the honey all over it because you've broken into that bottom or that top edge and you got honey all over. I always thought a hive tool would be an interesting thing. I wanted to buy some sticky boards, and obviously if I'm buying some medium supers, I'm going to need the frames and the corresponding foundation for that. So I'm going to be politically correct here. Typically, when I purchase from one vendor, and I'll tell you who won the selection here, but I went to their website, and I tried to look at a screen bottom board, and I was really disappointed with the information available to me. I want to know what I'm buying. I want to understand how it's built, and I want to know how the trays work and all that other stuff. It's not being picky, it's just understanding your equipment, because whatever you're going to buy, as a beekeeper, you probably understand that you're going to live with it for a long time. And you just don't want those picadillos that you can go, you know what, somebody else probably has done this better. So I went to the website, I was looking at the screen bottom board, and I was really disenfranchised with the description. I was not happy with the picture. And I wasn't sure at that point whether I wanted to make the purchase from this vendor. And it was the catalyst that moved me to go into selection mode. So here's what I did. I thought immediately of the podcast and said, you know what, this would be an interesting episode or an interesting segment for the podcast. Why don't I take my shopping list and go to some of the major vendors and go through the experience and bring it back to the listener in the context of how much it cost, what kind of experience from the web, and what are some of my thoughts. Now, before I delve in, I'll let you know that I work as a project manager for a pharmaceutical company, but my background in this company is working in web hosting. I worked for what could be deemed as the web hosting component or an internet service provider of the company. We provided external and internal web application support. And in the old days, I used to buy the servers, I used to rack the servers, cable the servers, load the operating system, and all that good stuff. So I have quite a bit of background, including support for applications. So when it comes to supporting e-commerce applications, not only have I worked in the space, I also support both the Beekeeper's Corner, which quite frankly is a really simple website and nothing to brag about, but other e-commerce sites, including soccer and all that stuff. But anyway, just telling you that I kind of have an understanding of this in relative terms, so I could speak the speak. Walter Kelly, Brushy Mountain, Man Lake, Date Ant, and Bitterbee were the five vendors that I chose. Are there others out there? Yeah, there's a lot. And there's also local providers. But you know what? When it comes time to order, catalogs are nice. Local providers are nice. But sometimes you just want to slide up behind a computer, find what you have, bang out the order, and it'll show up in a couple days, right? So here's what I did. I went to every single vendor's website, and I looked at these items that I just mentioned to you, my shopping list. I put it in the cart, and I compared the shopping experience between them and the cost, and just the general look and feel of the website. So where did I land with this? Let's talk about the shopping experience. First off, I'll start with a general assessment. Beekeeping supply houses are beekeeping supply houses. They're not web mavens. They're not Amazon. They're not these places that do really well at this. My recommendation to all these, if I had to give them a ranking of 1 to 10, there are no more than a 5 or a 6 for any of them. They really, someone could make a lot of money in the beekeeping supply business if they differentiated themselves by hiring a professional organization to go in and set their e-commerce up. And I know it's easier than it sounds, or it sounds easy and it's a complicated thing, but boy, I'll tell you, their websites are just terrible. There's some websites that you go to, you can't even tell which link to click to get to the beekeeping supplies because they're selling soap and other things. But off the rant, onto the topic here. So what am I looking for in a information? Quite frankly, I open with that. I'm looking for a reasonable description of the product that I want. And if you've ever been on a good website, and you know who does this really well is Sears. They'll give you a picture. You'll click on the picture. They'll give you different angles. You could zoom in on the picture, and you could turn the picture sometimes or whatever. Many of these websites, one, they didn't even have a picture, or the picture was minuscule. And I love the ones where you click on the thumbnail and it opens a new picture in the window with the same size thumbnail. Come on, folks. That just doesn't make any sense to me. From a perspective of shopping, you always want to be a couple clicks away from what I want. And what do you call certain things, right? You're looking for frame and you're looking for foundation, right? And I'll use a web hosting term called taxonomy. It's about navigation, right? I don't know about you, but I expect the vendors listed to be beekeeping suppliers first and foremost. And I didn't get that impression when I got there. And then, is a wooden box that you assemble for a beehive a hive body? Is it a super? Is it called 10-frame equipment, as it's referred to on some of these websites? You almost have to discern what the nomenclature is that the website uses before you could figure out what it is you want to buy. If all else fails, these websites should provide every one of those descriptions, and you should be able to navigate it from whatever angle you come at your level. Because remember, you got people who are coming in here that are brand new beekeepers, and you have people that have been doing it for 50 years, and everything in between. If all else fails, pictures tell the tale. Put a picture of it, put a description of it, and have clear and concise navigation. And then use that navigation through everything, every page. If you click and go 3 clicks into a website, the navigation should remain consistent. There's a lot of disparity here in these websites. One of the most frustrating thing when looking at the frame and foundation selection, look, I'm a novice and I understand what the general size is, but how tall is a medium frame? I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know. So is it 12 inches, 9 inches, 6 inches? I could guess, but I want to know that I'm ordering the right thing, because the last thing you want to order is a medium box and end up with a tall frame. And some websites, foundation is not intuitive, right? What are the dimensions? Is it X by X? Is it millimeters? Some offered X by X dimension, and I had to go figure out if that was a medium or not. The most frustrating one was the site that everything I clicked on had a 10 to 50 minimum order, and you literally had to click every option of a medium super to find the one that you could order one at a time. Very frustrating. Were the frames assembled sometimes? They talked about quality of wood to the layperson. I don't know the difference. If it's a small knot versus a big knot, I could get that part. But some of the descriptions were really clear. Another said pine versus whatever else you make boxes out of. And to the layperson, is pine better than this, which is better than that? They need to offer descriptions for people who don't understand. I was able to navigate. I've seen enough catalogs and read enough descriptions to get there. But from a review standpoint, They just need to do a better job. Now, one of them went to the point of saying the quality of the wood shown as clear cedar, which had a description that clear cedar was better quality than pine, which is being offered. Another said that the knots were no bigger than a pencil eraser versus ones that could be larger than that. Those are actually really nice descriptive terms. They should all kind of fall into that realm. I know, asking for panacea here, but I'm going to call it what it is, right? The biggest frustration, though, is what I said before with the poor pictures. Tiny pictures do no good whatsoever. And, you know, here we go. This is this episode's Kevin moment. If you're into beekeeping, then you probably have seen these companies' catalogs. They're fabulous. Beautiful color pictures, great descriptions. The prices are clear and concise. Things are grouped logically. They have a great index. The catalogs for these companies are really done by professionals and immaculate. I don't understand why they couldn't translate a little better the catalog taxonomy and information over to the web presence, but there's clearly some sort of miss in this. So, all right, drum roll, please. What did I go with? I ended up shopping with Brushy Mountain. In the grand scheme of things, their price was maybe a couple of dollars higher than the one that had the best price. Not going to say who that was, but price to me is not always the most relevant thing. Shipping was in line, and one of them offered free shipping, which was nice, but I could not get the description of the bottom board, the screen bottom board, that I wanted enough to be confident that I wanted to get stuck with those. And I'm ordering three of them, and I don't want three bad ones. You know, every once in a while for something like that, you could order one and see what it looks like, but they're not inexpensive, a bottom board. So I really want to know what I'm buying when you're getting to that. So anyway, disqualified that vendor. But Brushy Mountain, they were the one that had probably the most reasonable taxonomy. They had pictures along with descriptions. Their shipping costs were well established. Their shopping cart was really well done. Just in general, I thought the best shopping experience was with Brushy Mountain. If you'd like to send a note over about a preferred vendor that you have, or a good or bad experience, be happy to share that with our listeners. Nothing against Man Lake or any of those others. They are fabulous beekeepers. They've been around for a long time. And you have to remember that when you place an order with this, part of the package is how these vendors treat you when something goes wrong. You need to make returns, and none of that's evaluated here. But I will say on Brushy Mountain's behalf, one of the things I ordered was back ordered, which was the medium frames. I get a call the next day from them indicating what was on back order, when they expected to receive a shipment 2 days later, and that the fact that it would be here. And got home from work today, and there it is sitting in the breezeway. So, pleased with the experience. Haven't opened up the packaging yet, but I guess in this mini quasi review, Brushy Mountain gets the nod here over the others. So that's it. We're 45 minutes or so into this episode, and I have in my mind, and I wanted to bring this up, a listener sent a note in asking about essential oils. There was actually some good coverage on another podcast, Craig Yearden's podcast that I've talked about in the past. He had a Fat Bee Man episode, and I believe there's a link to that on the show notes from the last episode. The Fat Bee Man was talking about essential oils, but I'm interested in that. Quite frankly, the funny thing is, though, there's really not a lot out there on it. As I've been doing the research, trying to pull something together for an episode, I have been hard at work, folks, and even though I haven't chatted with you, I have been doing some research in the background and haven't found the opportunity to get some information to collect to bring that back here. So I'm going to seek out some guidance. I haven't been together with our Beekeepers Association in quite a while, but as I said, meeting up in Warren County at the Belvedere Library. So if you're available this Saturday, come on out and join us in New Jersey as we're going to talk about honey flow, or nectar flow is the better way to say it, and spring management. All that we've been chatting about here will be talked about in the group setting. I really do hope to put something together for essential oils and bring that back for an episode, because not only am I interested in bringing that back to the listener who requested it, I want to know for myself. I'm quite interested in, obviously, IPM and some of that stuff, and looking forward to finding more information. And if I have to, I'm going to start making some phone calls to somebody in the know who can get the information if I can't find it out on the web. So I guess that is going to wrap it up for this episode. Didn't have anything else prepared, but did want to get behind the microphone and chat with you folks. Be sure to go out and check out the Swarm video if that interests you, www.bkcorner.org. Again, you can send me a note at kevin@bkcorner.org. And you know what? I promised to put a phone number up. I have a new phone in the house that we can use for the podcast. And the funny thing is, I don't know. Oh, yes, I do. It's 609-460-4037. If you're going to give us a call, leave a message. If I don't answer the phone, I'm often sitting here in the office, so if you do call, I might just pick it up and you can talk to me directly. But if I'm not there, make sure you let me know your name and how to pronounce that. Leave us a message and we'll give you a shout out. If you want to ask a question, you can leave that on the message machine too. We may be able to zap that out of that and play it here on the podcast and give it an answer. So 609-460-4037 is the number for the podcast. So thanks everybody for listening. This has been the Beekeeper's Corner podcast. My name's Kevin England. Appreciate you listening and hope to get behind the mic again real soon. Take care, everyone.